19. Third movement. False Traitor's Trill. Author's notes. Personal opinion of Itachi. The dude is batshit. Sorry, because I know a lot of fandom has him on this immense pedestal, but while I respect his suffering, it's mostly of his own making. And regardless, he's so very much a part of the fucked up mess Sasuke became. So, I think I've represented him more or less fairly here. Trill. Rapid alternation between notes that are a half tone or whole tone apart. Itachi is weary down to his bones. He's lived far longer than he ever planned to, longer than he ever even vaguely considered he would be able to. 12 years ago, when he planted the seed of destruction in his little brother's mind, he had done it with a full understanding of Sasuke's nature, his recklessness and single-minded drive and strain of Uchiha madness. He had even accounted for the fact that Sasuke would grow up alone, outside of the clan's influence, and be less susceptible because of it. A few words, a bloody and unforgettable nightmare, a betrayal by the one Sasuke loved best. That was all it took to activate the curse of hatred, so very much a part of an Uchiha's genetic makeup. It's a funny thing, their curse. The source of their power, of the Sharingan, but at the same time their inevitable downfall. Itachi knows very well the pain of it, of the transformation into the Mangekyo. Sometimes even now he can feel Shisui pressing his bloody eye into Itachi's hand, smiling all the while. Can feel the burn of it in his veins. Grief and, is this because of me? What have I done? And the loss of the only Uchiha who ever understood him completely. Afterwards, it felt right to be blamed for his death, to be looked on as a murderer. Because wasn't he? He'll catch himself, sometimes, writing Shisui's name as Water Death, rather than Still Water. And it makes him want to laugh until the ache is gone, until the regret is fully buried the way it never really is. Makes him want to rage because the curse should have taken him then, swallowed him up and allowed him the reprieve of simple madness. But his loyalty to Konoha had saved him, even as it doomed him, and he'd been left alive and alone, a pacifist responsible for more deaths than most mass murderers, a traitor to the village he would do anything to save, a mortal enemy to the little brother he loves more than life itself. But the curse hadn't taken Sasuke, in the end, and it's something that still mystifies Itachi, for all his genius. For 5 years, all had gone according to plan. Sasuke had hated him, and hunted him, and seemed dead set on killing him, and Itachi had felt relief, when he likely should have felt regret. So he'd kept to his course, worked with the Akatsuki for their mad goal, and watched Madara use them from the shadows like so many eager puppets. And he'd been content in the knowledge that everything was going as he'd predicted. And then one day, Sasuke had just stopped. There had been no more inquiries as to Itachi's whereabouts and plans. Instead, Itachi had asked after his missing teammate, the Kyuubi Jinchuriki. He'd spent the 2 years he was outside of the village with Jiraiya, and something in Itachi cringes at the thought of how much damage this self-proclaimed pervert might have inflicted on his innocent brother. Looking for the Uzumaki boy, and even now, 5 years later, has yet to give any indication that he still wants revenge. It's... For the most part, Itachi doesn't know whether to be upset or glad. On the one hand, it's turned all of his plans on their head. On the other, Sasuke will forever be a sweet, smiling 7-year-old in his mind, no matter how much time passes. And turning him into a vengeance-driven killer never sat comfortably with Itachi, regardless of his resolve. If Itachi wishes to motivate his brother again, It's more than likely that he'll have to kill Uzumaki Naruto to do it. Perhaps it's trite, but love can either subvert the curse of hatred or bring it blazing back to life. And Itachi is certain that Sasuke's love for Uzumaki was what pulled him back the first time. Logically, the Jinchuriki's death should send him over the edge. Such a thing would even line up neatly with Akatsuki's aims, and bring Itachi one step closer to being in Madara's circle, minuscule though it is, of trust. Their shared blood is that much of an advantage, at least. However, killing Uzumaki has the same problems inherent in any plan to gather the tailed beasts. Namely the fact that five have entirely vanished, hidden away to the extent that even Madara and all his power, even Pain with his Rinnegan, and Sasori with his spy ring, can find no trace of them. Two have been captured, yes, but the remaining two, widely known and honored, which also increases the difficulty of taking them, have grown markedly wary and elusive, staying one step ahead of any pursuers, as though privy to all of Akatsuki's movements. Itachi would suspect a mole, but he honestly doubts that any of his fellow members would betray the organization. They're all content playing pawn in some greater game. Uncoiling from his seat on a boulder above the hideout, Itachi stretches subtly and lets out a silent breath. There's no stiffness. He's too well-trained a shinobi to allow his muscles to freeze up, even so close to his allies. But he feels even more tired than when he emerged to watch the sunrise. Sleep is hard to come by, an indulgence he rarely manages to attain. His illness is an ache in his chest, burning and throbbing, and despite Kabuto frequently pilfering medicines from Orochimaru and delivering them whenever he comes to give Sasori his reports, he's not getting better. Continued existence is about all he can hope for, right now. And that alone is hard enough. He won't die, not until Sasuke comes to kill him as penance for his slaughter of their clan. But sometimes he very much wants to. Itachi takes one last look at the sun, well above the horizon and spilling its light across the valley. He takes a single moment more to himself, committing the sight to memory, and then turns back towards the entrance. There are no missions today, so he may as well try for at least a few hours of sleep. He takes three steps back towards the door, and then the entire wall of earth around it explodes outwards. Itachi blinks. There's a roar like a wounded animal, a thunder of heavy footsteps, and a slim figure in gray robes comes flying out of the newly enlarged opening, landing in a crouch on the hillside, even as Kisame charges out after him. Samehada is out and unwrapped, but a good chunk of the shark-like mouth is missing, and long, impossibly deep slashes have trimmed it down to a far less intimidating size. Kisame roars, clearly furious beyond anything Itachi has seen of him, and lunges with his sword, leading. The figure in gray moves to meet him without pause, and Samehada strikes a far more slender Jian with a sound like a clear, bright bell. Purple scales flutter and fall away, and the other shinobi smirks, long black hair whirling around him as he disengages, ducks another swing, and darts back out of reach. "And you call yourself a swordsman?" Orochimaru mocks, twisting Kusanagi showily in one hand. "Surely one of the last of the seven swordsmen of the mist can do better."
"I'll beat you into the ground!"
Kisame bellows, and this is normally where he would summon his water, raising an inescapable dome around himself and his opponent. But instead he lunges again. Orochimaru laughs like it's a victory, cold and superior and contemptuous, and brings Kusanagi to bear once more. Itachi is already moving, because despite his loyalties to Konoha, Orochimaru is certainly not included, and even if the Snake Sage can match Kisame one-on-one, he won't have a hope against Kisame and Itachi both. But half an instant before he reaches the dueling pair, a gout of flame waylays him, and he has to leap back and away to keep from being burned. When the fire clears, Jiraiya is standing before him. dark eyes sharp and hard. "Uchiha Itachi," he murmurs, and Itachi is far more used to seeing the fool he plays rather than the dangerous man he actually is. So much so that his stare is nearly startling in its intensity. "The sun in Jiraiya," he acknowledges after a beat of confusion. His mind is already racing, because Jiraiya and Orochimaru both have their backs to each other, which is unexpected. They're here together, fighting together, and the fact that Deidara and Sasori have yet to emerge from the tunnels likely means they've been incapacitated in some way. The mere fact that the two Sannin are present at one of Akatsuki's best hidden bases is cause enough for worry. But together, all of these facts add up to a picture that Itachi is displeased with. Itachi spares half a glance for Kisame and barely contains a wince on his partner's behalf when he sees Kusanagi take another chunk out of the shark sword. Clearly the rumors that it can cut through almost anything are true. No wonder Kisame lost control of his temper. He loves his sword to a likely unhealthy degree. "So," Jiraiya says lightly, and Itachi looks back at him, feeling the ripple of chakra gathering and building, tensing because whatever Jiraiya is preparing, it's probably big and capable of widespread destruction. Itachi readies himself to leap out of the way and hit the sage with a genjutsu, only to be entirely floored when Jiraiya asks casually, "Any idea why Nagato, Konan, and Madara saw us coming and bailed? They even left Fish Face over there to distract us." Itachi blinks again. "What? They left?" he demands, and his voice comes out far sharper than he intended. Pain and Madara are both capable of leveling anyone before them, including the two sages and whatever help they might call up. To leave, and moreover, to leave without gathering the rest of the organization, with Sasori and Deidara nowhere to be found, and only Itachi and Kisame to stand against them, without stopping to fight or even attempting to weaken them? They're in the process of doing something. Something delicate that they can't afford to have interrupted. But Itachi has heard nothing about future plans. Not a word. And regardless of his true alliances, he's one of the strongest, most driven members. Why wasn't he informed? "Yeah," Jiraiya affirms, watching Itachi's expression closely. Realizing this, he carefully smooths out any emotion into simple blankness and hopes he didn't give any of his thoughts away. "Funny that. Of course, Orochi and I had the bad luck of bursting into their meeting, but to be honest, I'm a little insulted that we didn't warrant anything more than a smokescreen. You wouldn't happen to know anything about that, would you, Uchiha?" Before he can answer, Orochimaru flashes between them, almost too fast to see, and Itachi has to leap back a step to keep from being flattened by his partner, who's still in pursuit, his grin wide and particularly bloodthirsty. "Jiraiya!" the snake sannin snarls, a wealth of meaning and emotion both contained in three syllables, and then slides to the side like one of his summons to avoid a blow that takes off a lock of hair. As it flutters to the ground, Orochimaru hisses at Kisame with tightly contained fury and slams him back through two trees with a vicious windjutsu. Jiraiya laughs, as though this is the funniest thing he's seen in a week, and ducks forward. "Trade you, princess?" he offers cheerfully, a whirling orb of chakra already forming in one hand, and Orochimaru falls back like they've practiced this exact movement countless times. "He's yours," Orochimaru responds, and smirks at Itachi as he comes to a halt in front of him. "Which I suppose would make you mine." Itachi doesn't fight a grimace. Orochimaru was already banished by the time he was cognizant, but he's encountered the man a handful of times as a missing nin, and is very much not fond of him, especially given the threat that Orochimaru, with his desire for the Sharingan, poses to Sasuke. Before he can respond, though, Jiraiya scoffs and calls, "Stop sounding like a creep, Teme!" even as he traps Kisame in a dome of earth. Orochimaru hisses at him, too, even though his eyes never leave Itachi. Don't think I've forgotten what you just called me, fool. He warns sharply, and then his gaze seems to catch on something within Itachi's body, along the edges of his chakra, and his smirk turns wider than ever. Oh, how convenient. I see you've been taking your medicine like a good boy.
Still creepy, bastard!
Jiraiya laughs, a cocoon of spikes enclosing him as Kisame attacks. But Itachi has no attention to spare for the two Sannin's byplay. He tenses, the meaning of the snake sage's words striking him in a rush. Kabuto. Kabuto is the traitor, even though Sasori has always sworn the man is solely his puppet, and therefore his claims of having stolen medicine from Orochimaru are likely false. So Itachi has been taking medicine from Orochimaru, and that is... His body stiffens, seizes like he's just ingested a double helping of paralytic, and he falls to his knees, and then collapses the rest of the way to the ground, frantically grabbing for his chakra. It comes, but in the same instant, Itachi feels a cold hand settle over his stomach, and a power that's definitely not his flares. When it fades, there's nothing. No Sharingan, no jutsus, no chakra at all. Not since the day he started training has Itachi felt this horribly, achingly defenseless. And once more, cunning wins out over strength, Orochimaru muses from somewhere above him. Genius and resolve will only take you so far, boy, especially when your opponent is the same. The snake Sannin strides away, light-footed, and a sharply snapped jutsu makes the earth shake. Kisame cries out once more, snarls and roars as his footsteps thunder forward. Orochimaru! Jiraiya shouts. And then fire and wind rise in tandem from two different sources. A body hits the ground, slack and all the heavier for it, and the smell of scorched flesh reaches Itachi where he lies. He'd close his eyes if he could, would mourn if he were able, because Kisame was a friend found where he'd never expected. But they were also both missing Nin, and of all the ways Kisame could have died as a soldier of Akatsuki, this likely would have been his choice. A fight against a powerful opponent, two even, and a relatively clean death.
I think that's technically cheating, Jiraiya says after a moment.
Orochimaru snorts, but there's a pained undertone to it that's new. It worked, he says dryly. By the virtue of that, and being used by a shinobi, it's not cheating. It's clever strategy.
Drugging his medicine? That sounds like cheating to me. Especially since I had to face the big guy without even a sword.
And I assisted you, both by weakening him beforehand and dividing his focus afterwards. By your definition, that would also be cheating. A soft snort, a slap like Jiraiya clapped the other man on the shoulder, and a wry,
I never said I didn't appreciate it, bastard. But now what? Any idea where the others might have headed?
There's a long pause, and then a sigh. In 4 days, Uzushio will send at least 3 Jinchuriki to Konoha, possibly more. If either Roshi or Utakata intend to play diplomat and Uzukage's assistant, it will be the first time since the creation of Uzushio's wards that more Jinchuriki will be out of the village than in it. Even if the Akatsuki are currently unaware of the tailed beast's presence, a chance to assess Uzushio's strength is not something they can afford to miss. And once they see who exactly is representing the village... Another pause, another pained breath, and then rapid footsteps.
Orochimaru, you idiot! Tell me when you're bleeding!
Despite your opinion of me, Jiraiya, Orochimaru bites out, I am not a damsel you must rescue every time we go into a fight.
You think I don't know that? You saved my ass just as many times as I saved yours when we were kids, and you're no more a damsel in distress than Tsunade, Jiraiya. So, prisoner, what do we do with him?
The silence that stretches out is dangerous. But after a moment, Orochimaru huffs and says, there are a pair of seals on him right now, an even-numbered one to regulate his chakra, and then the five element seal to counteract the first by disrupting his chakra system, only to reapply them in a few hours, given his ability level. But the drug's effect will last until I release the jutsu. It should be safe enough to take him with us. Itachi wishes he could grit his teeth. The five element seal, of course. He encounters sealing used as a weapon so infrequently that he rarely anticipates it. Usually that's fine, since practically no one has mastered it well enough to use in a fight. But if he survives this, he'll never make that mistake again. But as long as they don't kill him outright, and a very large part of him is surprised they haven't, given Orochimaru's reputation and Jiraiya's devotion to protecting the village, it's fine. He's already gleaned enough information to set his thoughts whirling again. Uzushio is where the Jinchuriki are. Their barriers are what have kept the tailed beast safe for the last 6 years. It makes so much sense, and Itachi wonders why he never connected the pieces before. The Jinchuriki vanishing, Uzumaki leaving, Shinobi deserting their countries and heading for the coast only to disappear. Uzushio has reformed, and it seems the village has started taking in strays. Paper rustles, like a scroll unfurling, and pulls him out of his thoughts. I can take us a little over halfway back. We'll have to run the rest of the way. Get him up and come here. A large hand grips Itachi's bicep and hauls him upright, though his body stays limp and well beyond his control. Itachi ignores the way it makes his head spin, and occupies himself with figuring out just how he's going to make Orochimaru and Jiraiya regret this to the end of their days. The storm that's threatening has yet to break, even though the clouds have been dripping lower and lower all day. Even though the sun is going down and the air is once more still and muggy. Ino raises a hand to shield her eyes from the light of the dying sun, just slipping through the cloud cover on the far horizon, and searches the sky for any hint of blue. There were patches earlier, but now the entire sky is gray-black and getting darker. On her left, Shikamaru squints upward as well, then turns back to the entrance of the bar with a huffed, "Troublesome. No good cloud watching in this weather." Ino rolls her eyes. "You could," she points out. "You just wouldn't be able to see anything but clouds. And I would kick your ass for being a lazy layabout."
"If my mother didn't like you," Shikamaru mutters,
but it's under his breath, and for his sake, Ino pretends not to hear it. He said yes when she proposed, so he has absolutely no room to complain. Everything that's happened from there on out can be classified as completely his fault. "Is everyone coming tonight?" she asks instead, and gives Shikamaru her sweetest smile until he opens the door for her, looking long-suffering. Shikamaru pauses for half a beat, calling up missions rosters and assignments in his head the way pretty much only he can do. Ino never quite forgets that he's a genius, but sometimes she remembers to appreciate it more than she usually does.
"Neji and Tenten will, as soon as they're off duty," he says, frowning faintly. "Hinata is on leave, so most likely, and Kiba said he was coming, but he seemed distracted. Choji should be here soon, and Shino was coming after he finished training. Lee and Sakura, too."
"Good. It's been a few weeks since we could all meet up." They're early, so Ino doesn't expect to see anyone sitting in their usual corner, as she drags Shikamaru through the scattered tables. But as she rounds a pillar, both she and her fiancé halt in surprise, because it's occupied. Sasuke beat them here. Ino casts a startled look at Shikamaru, and he returns it, eyebrows lifted faintly in well-hidden astonishment, because Sasuke beat them here, and is currently sitting in his usual seat with an extra chair pulled up next to him. That's occupied as well, which is even more of a surprise, as is the fact that it's someone familiar, but not one of the 12. Ino takes in the upswept blonde hair, the ever-present mask, the short purple kimono over leggings and fishnet, and the Uzushio Hitayate tied around one bicep,
and wonders just when, exactly, Sasuke became so friendly with the Uzushio emissary. Then Sasuke leans over even further, and Yoko leans in, and that's definitely a kiss. You know, blinks and replays the last few seconds in her mind. A grin stretching across her face, she flounces over to the table and flings herself into her seat, beaming at her partner. Oh, Sasuke! Why didn't you tell me that all of that suspicion was you covering up a crush? Sasuke splutters. Of course, Ino continues blithely, because this is payback for every rookie he's ever made her babysit. I probably should have guessed, right? Because he's totally your type. I mean, she waves a hand at the entirely bemused-looking Yoko, encompassing the blonde hair, lean build, and gymnast muscles. He doesn't just push your buttons, right, Sasuke-kun? He does the tango over them and then the waltz for good measure. I'm surprised you didn't drool the first time you saw him. Sasuke looks torn between the desire to bolt, the urge to whack his head against the tabletop a few times, and the overwhelming need to throttle Ino. And I'm surprised, he grits out, that no one drowned you at birth. Oi, Shikamaru huffs, sliding into the chair next to Ino. He casts a glance at her, and she just grins back, lounging back in her chair and entirely content with how much of a rise she's managed to get out of the Uchiha. Defending my honor? That's cute. Ino leans forward to kiss Shikamaru's cheek, and he rolls his eyes at her, even though there's a faint smile pulling at his lips. Not that I need it, or should I go remind you of that? Shikamaru pulls a face. You are never getting me on the sparring grounds with you again, woman. I still can't look Shizune in the face after last time. Were she in the mood to be merciful, Ino would let it go at that. But she's never been a gracious winner, and inspects her nails with a smirk as she draws. Oh, don't worry, Shika. I already told her the whole story. She knows. For a long moment, Shikamaru stares flatly at her. Ino just beams in response and tosses a surreptitious wink to the laughing Yoko. He grins back, and Sasuke looks to be debating whether or not to separate them for the good of humankind. Anyone else interested in story time? Yoko asks cheerfully, green eyes sparkling with wicked mirth, and Ino grins back even as the other two protest loudly. For this story? Always, she promises. Oh, hey, want to hear about the time Sasuke's hair caught on fire? Or how about the time he got hung up in one of Konohamaru's traps? Or when Chika mistook the Lightning Country Daimyo's wife for a... No, Sasuke says. Yes, Yoko counters, and Ino gives Sasuke her sweetest smile. Three guesses who she's gonna listen to here. So, she starts brightly, and Sasuke curses. Shikamaru groans and drops his head down to the table. Wake me when the nightmare ends, he demands without looking up. Ino just laughs because Sasuke brought someone he's interested in, a person who doesn't know him but would clearly like to, and that's a definite step in the right direction. She can work with that.